Hey, it's Graham here from the Confident Man Project, and today I've got a special guest with me. He's a new friend of mine, Todd Settlemyer. And Todd is a confidence coach and the creator of the Become Naturally Confident training course. And I'm really looking forward to picking Todd's brains because he's an expert in dealing with the subconscious mind, which is incredibly powerful if you don't realize it. Your subconscious is the thing that's running your whole life. So when it comes to confidence, I think dealing with this is key. And Todd has some unique tools for doing that. So I want to welcome you, Todd.
Hey, Graham. Thanks a lot, man. I'm glad to be here. This is fun stuff.
Excellent. So before we rip into the subconscious stuff, could you tell us a bit about what it is that you do?
Yeah, well, I've been coaching for about 5 years now. Actually, this month or last month, it's been 5 years. And I've been doing private coaching for quite a long time. And it's all over the phone. When I started out, it wasn't. It was through workshops and one-on-one, meeting people in their homes, stuff like that. But ultimately, I have a set of tools that I teach people and a set of skills that I teach people, and then also facilitate people past these big blocks and unconscious stories that they're living out, and help them really figure out why they are the way they are, why the same things keep happening, why they're having the kind of challenges that they are. And improve every area of their life, because they're really, you know, they're leveraging themselves and they're cleaning up the internal stuff so they can go out there into the world and be a confident, empowered, self-directed, self-reliant type of person that we all can be. And it was only up until about a year ago that I finally realized that ultimately the end result that I help people do is to have a lot more self-confidence. And that's really primary. I know you agree with that. It's like confidence really is everything that opens the doors to success in any area of life, whether it's business, relationships, you know, personal activities or getting in shape, family life, money, all that stuff. We've got to have self-confidence. Otherwise, we kind of shrink and play small, or we have developed bad habits or addictions or codependency, and on and on goes the list. And so a lot of people are living in mediocrity and lack and limitation and struggling and stress, and they don't know how to get out of it because they're too focused on the outside world and they need to work on themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Totally. So confidence is kind of an umbrella term for being everything that you can be and getting rid of those limitations that hold us back.
Yeah. I mean, the definition of confidence really, I mean, if you look up the etymology of the word, it comes from two words in Latin, which is con and fidere, which means within and trust. So it's trust within. So basically, I kind of translate that to being able to trust yourself. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily being fearless. In fact, it usually is the opposite. We all have fear. It's a built-in instinct to protect ourselves. And it's the matter of trusting yourself in the face of fear, in the face of struggle or challenge or uncertainty, trusting yourself to be able to deal with it, to handle it, mm-hmm. instead of running away or doing something that's less empowered.
Uh-huh.
So,
got it. So I think some people have this view that confident people, they don't feel fear, and that's not what you're saying at all, is it?
No, man, I get scared all the time.
Uh-huh.
It's a matter of what I do with that fear and how I behave and the choices I make that's important. I can face the fear and remember I'm going to be okay. I've been through hard stuff before. I can take a baby step. I'm going to stay. I'm going to speak my mind. I'm going to stand up for myself, or I'm going to do it anyway. And, you know, we can't run away from fear. We all have fear. We're going to always have fear. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing we have fear. Otherwise, we'd probably, you know, have a lot of accidents and make big mistakes.
Step in front of buses.
Yeah.
Yeah, got that. Right. So tell me, Todd, how did you get into all this? Like, what made you interested in confidence and coaching people in the first place?
Well, I never really set out to become some kind of teacher or coach or to do what I do nowadays. It just kind of came to me. You know, starting back when I was a little tiny kid, I can remember pretty much all of my childhood nowadays. In fact, I can even recall my birth, and that might sound a little crazy to people, but
right on.
Your subconscious mind basically kind of is like a recorder. It has an aspect to it that has, it's like hits record a few months before we're even born. So there's all this information and senses and data that's streaming to us all the time that's being recorded, And it's all stored in our cells in our body, and we can actually recall all kinds of events and experiences if we learn how to do it without hypnotherapy. I've never been trained in hypnotherapy, but I've learned a few different techniques and then developed them further on my own to show myself and recall what happened to me and what did I experience. And then it ended up developing that and teaching people, you know, in a systematic way. But when I was a kid, I was really shy. I was really sensitive, very introverted, and I just was clueless. I just kind of couldn't figure out how the world worked. And I remember having the awareness that, you know, I really want to grow up, because once I'm an adult, then I'll know how to handle things and I won't have to rely upon anybody. And especially my parents, who don't seem to have it figured out. And so I really wanted to grow up fast. And I suffered a lot when I was a kid, just internally. Nothing necessarily really bad happened to me. I wasn't abused. I wasn't neglected. I didn't grow up with a lot being handed to me. My family was pretty poor, and we had a lot of challenges, and there was dysfunction and emotional imbalance and stuff, but nothing major that would, you know, I could point at and say that really screwed me up. It was more about how I internalized experiences. Uh-huh. And I understand I had clinical depression and some other kind of emotional, maybe disorders, a psychiatrist would call it, at a very young age. So I had insomnia and I was always stressed out. I was always tense and afraid. I didn't know what of, but I never felt safe. I always felt like something bad was going to happen. And because of how I was feeling and thinking and processing things and behaving, it just ended up calling those more and more experiences to me. And, you know, I quickly figured out that other kids are not safe and they'll pick on me and that I am not cool and that I can't do certain things. And the older I got, the more I was imploding. And so I became very isolated in my own mind, and I avoided people. And I really liked girls at a very young age, but I didn't know how to interact with them. They were just this weird creature that I had no idea how to deal with. And so I would fall in love with or have a crush on some girl, and she didn't even know I existed, let alone liked her. And I would get my heart broken, you know. Uh-huh. And I really took things personally. So growing up, I was from the get-go, I was very imbalanced and very insensitive very sensitive and had very low self-esteem. And when I was 10 years old, my parents split up. Mm-hmm. And coincidentally, that's also when I started drinking alcohol, alcoholically. I discovered alcohol and I was like, wow, this makes me feel good. It makes me feel 7 feet tall and bulletproof and good looking and cool and hip. Mm-hmm. And I made a decision right then and there that I'm going to try to do this as often as possible. And since my mom was raising us and I had three other siblings, my mom was raising us. She had worked full time. She was putting herself through college. We basically raised ourselves. Mm-hmm. I didn't have and my older brother, you know, he wasn't really paying attention to me much except when he wanted to beat me up or criticize me. And so I didn't have any kind of role models or male authority figures that can kind of show me how to grow up and become a man. And I was hanging out with the wrong group and got into drugs and alcohol at a very young age and got into, you know, mischief and got arrested and went to my first AA meeting when I was 14 years old, ordered by the judge, the local judge, because I got, you know, caught underage drinking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was kind of a big clue for me that I didn't really realize until about 20 years later that I had a problem. Yeah. And it just spiraled out of control from there. Through my teens, I just became more and more depressed and more full of angst and anxiety. And I didn't develop any social skills. I didn't know how to be cool. I didn't know how to interact with people. Mm-hmm. I knew I was smart. I knew I had these talents for athleticism and things like that. But, you know, I just took a lot of flack from my friends. I didn't know how to stick up for myself. Mm. And so that taught them it was okay to kind of pick on Todd. And I just started developing a very dark view of the world. Like, it was a big, scary place. Everybody sucks. Mm-hmm. Nobody's on my side. I'm alone. I'm scared. I don't know how to deal with anything. And so the more I could escape into alcohol and get drunk and numb myself out, the better. And yeah. So by the time I was 18, I was drinking a case of beer a night. I had quit high school. I went to a trade school to become an airplane mechanic and moved out when I was 17. So I was living in this big city. Previously to that, I was, you know, from a very small town. I moved to Phoenix, Arizona, and amongst, you know, 4 million people. And I was just clueless, but I thought I was a big grown up now. And I was drinking every night. I don't know how I got through school, but my alcoholism and depression and insecurities and low self-esteem just really took a hold of me, and it got very dark.
Yeah.
And within a few years, I was suicidal.
And it's amazing when we adopt that dark view of the world based on some very early childhood experience, how it just snowballs, and then the world reflects that back to us, right? Like, we see the world the way we think it is, and the world kind of shows that to us, you know? I mean, I know it's the subconscious that's causing all this, but if you think the world is a dark, scary place, then it's what you're going to see, right?
Yeah. What we believe and what we focus on is what we get.
Mm.
And we forget that really quickly and very often.
So obviously you dug yourself out of that. So how did you go about doing that?
Well, it took me, you know, it took me hitting the rocks and very low bottom and then scraping along the bottom for a few years. I went to rehab 5 times and I was arrested usually for just being drunk in public or argumentative with police when they pulled me over or at a party or something. I wasn't really a criminal, but I just got into a lot of stupid trouble. Mm-hmm. And I got laid off from my job because I had attempted suicide at 21 years old. I slit my wrists and, you know, they found out about it.
Wow.
And they said, take 6 months and go to rehab and get yourself worked out. We'll pay you a percentage of your regular pay, and then come back. We want you. You're a good, you know, good employee. And I took that as a license to just get screwed up. And I didn't go back.
Uh-huh.
And I ended up not working for about 3 years. And eventually my mom was the only person in my life that was left that would have anything to do with me. And then she got so sick of me that she just basically said, you can't stay here any longer. And kicked me out. So I was homeless for a while, and I was in and out of this sober house and a Christian men's mission where they just kind of take these guys in and give them a place to sleep and some food and then preach the gospel to them. And they wouldn't have me any longer. So I was homeless and begging for money to buy my next bottle of booze, and very suicidally depressed.
Mm.
And I just said a prayer one night on my knees out in a parking lot in front of this really crappy motel I was staying at. Because I was about to jump in front of this train that was across the street. We had a train going through town every 15 minutes. And I just said, you know what, if there is a God, or God, if you're there, then, you know, help me out here because I'm ready to quit. Mm. And I was very serious about it. And the next thing I knew, I guess it was a couple of days later, because I was a blackout drinker. I didn't remember things. I came to in the hospital and I was tied to the bed, and there was a policeman standing there. I guess I had been combative, and they, you know, called the police, and he ran my driver's license and found out I had some bench warrants for not paying fines, and I got sent to the suicide watch cell again in jail, and blah, 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 blah. I got out of jail. My sister picked me up on her birthday, and I gave up. I surrendered. I said, I'm going to die. I'm one of those people that can't get sober and that can't fix their lives, and I just let go, and I actually started doing what the people in Alcoholics Anonymous suggested.
Right.
And I stayed sober, and wow, I started learning how to live my life. And I got very involved in the 12-step program, and it was fantastic.
Uh-huh.
And after a couple of years, I started getting into other forms of personal development, spirituality and New Age stuff and how to control our mind and how our minds work and psychology and all these things. I just became a real student of, you know, how to figure myself out and improve myself.
Yeah.
One thing led to another, and I eventually was doing some really high-end, intense personal development type of seminars and trainings.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized I had a talent for teaching this stuff, and that I had a lot of experience that I could relate to people, and I was good at speaking. And I basically decided to start a business with a friend of mine who later became my wife and business partner. And I've been doing it ever since then. And over the years, I've kind of integrated a lot of different people's stuff, a lot of brilliant teachers, mentors, coaches, trainers, healers, psychiatrists, psychologists, all kinds of stuff. I really come from many different schools of thought and kind of put it together and then make it more simplified and practical for the average person who hasn't gotten into a lot of intense study or who doesn't have a lot of money to, you know, to or time to invest in that kind of stuff. And so I make it real practical for people. Uh-huh. And I develop a set of tools and skill sets that I teach. And it's pretty fun, man. I get a lot out of it. And I've helped a lot of people to change a lot, you know, every area of their life, really, from the inside out.
Right. So that's an amazing story of like turning your life around from that just complete black, dark place to now actually helping other people. So obviously you went through right down to rock bottom and then back again. But are there things that guys can do that are, cause people listening to this interview are going to be somewhere on that spectrum, right? From completely functional to like dark place. Are there things that they can do to avoid them having to go right to rock bottom in order to get this confidence so that they can, you know, be in the happy place?
Yeah, there's plenty to do. Action is key, but, you know, the first step is awareness. It's like being aware that I have a problem or I'm not getting what I want or I'm not happy. Mm-hmm. You've got to admit to yourself that your life isn't working the way you want it to, that you're not getting what you want. And yeah. And that's important. That's vital. A lot of people don't necessarily do that very easily. So we've got to admit to ourselves, like, something's not working, or I want better, but I'm not sure how to get it, and admit that to ourselves. And the next thing to do is make a decision, a commitment. Say, well, I'm going to figure this out, or I'm going to find some help. I'm going to change, because, you know, if we're not getting what we want, then we've got to do something differently.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to make a decision, a commitment to say, I want to improve this area of my life, or I want to change this about me, or I want to drop this bad habit, or I want to have more confidence in this kind of situation, and commit to it.
Yep.
Because we all can make resolutions and emotionally charged decisions that quickly burn out and we just forget about them and we go back to the way things are. And then, you know, 5 years goes by and we're like, how come my life sucks? Or how come I haven't reached any goals?
Mm-hmm.
So commitment is key. And then a big question that most people don't ask is, you know, we ask why or what or how or when or where. The most important question is who mm-hmm. can help me? Who's overcome the same kind of challenges before? Who's an expert in this? Who's somebody that I might even know in my family or in my neighborhood or my community or a friend? Who can help me so that I don't have to figure it all out for myself?
Yeah.
That has learned from experience, that can guide me, give me some support. And that's an important question. Like, look around, you know, and in this day and age, there's books, there's blogs, there's newsletters, there's free information everywhere at the push of a button. And a lot of great programs out there that are available. You get some help. Mm-hmm. Find somebody that has been through a similar situation or challenge and overcome it and get their advice or get their steps or their recipe for success.
Uh-huh. Got it. And from what you've told me, part of your recipe for success, or a big part, is this subconscious stuff, right?
Yeah, that's a – to me, it's the most important thing because, you know – positive thinking, goal planning, action taking, networking, pushing ourselves to just have a different habit, or all that is very important. But if your unconscious mind or your subconscious mind, which is really different than our conscious thinking mind, it actually, I think of it as kind of separate. Like there's this little 3-year-old inside of me mm-hmm. who's kind of running the show. He runs my body, my memory, all my automatic behaviors and responses, stuff that I don't have to think about, he's doing. And he has a different perception. His mind works differently. He's not rational. He's not very logical. It's a little child, very emotionally unevolved. And if he believes, we refer to, when we talk about ourselves, sometimes we say, well, part of me wants to do this and part of me wants to do that. I believe that when we're saying those things, we're actually referring to our subconscious mind and our conscious mind.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of conflict in perceptions. So if my unconscious mind or my inner child believes that a certain thing that I want to do is dangerous or bad or wrong or scary or unsafe, he's going to undermine, that part of me is going to undermine or sabotage or prevent my efforts. And this is like really key. So you can do affirmations all day long. You can take action and plans and get support and spend money and make a lot of effort. And you might make some progress. You might do really well. But you could do a lot better if the parking brake wasn't on. I think of it that way. It's like if we're driving in a car, I might be driving for the destination that I want to go to, but my inner child's thinking that that place is bad or wrong or scary. So he's like secretly putting on the parking brake, and I don't know it. So I'm having to use a lot more force and effort or fuel to drive towards that. And sometimes he grabs the steering wheel and takes me right off the road. And then I wonder, what the hell happened? How come I behaved that way? How come I was feeling that way? I went out of control. Why was I so insane for that period of time? It's because our unconscious mind takes over, because it operates from instinct. And there's only three basic responses to any kind of danger that has been written into our biology since the beginning of mankind. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't changed, which is to either run away or give up and play dead or try to fight and dominate. And those are the three basic, you know, reactions to any kind of danger. So whether it's, you know, we're in physical danger and somebody's pointing a gun at us, or we're about to try to go talk to a pretty girl and we're nervous about it, it feels the same. Mm-hmm. It feels like our life is being threatened. We don't recognize that. So our hands sweat, our heart pounds, our breathing increases. We get tunnel vision. We can't think. And it's because that part of us, our instinctual mind, feels threatened in a major way, and it's the same kind of response as if our life was being threatened. And this explains why it's so hard for so many of us to face fears and challenges and stuff.
Right. And I've heard this described as the fight, flight, or freeze response, right? Those are the three options our body goes into, yeah?
Yeah, right.
So that stuff happens just automatically, right? We don't even think. The pretty girl one is a good example. You see a pretty girl, you go up to talk to her, and suddenly it's like you're not there anymore. You're someone else because you're just in this state of overwhelmed fear. what can people do about that?
Well, for quick advice, you know, I have different exercises and tools depending upon how deep somebody wants to go. And a lot of it's outside the scope of this interview. We don't have time to go into it, but I can throw a few things out there that are really helpful.
Yeah.
One little quick process that I created for myself and then started teaching it is called the ACT tool. It's an acronym, ACT. And so each letter stands for a different step. And I made it kind of an acronym and simple and memorizable so it just becomes something you can do in the moment. Mm-hmm. Without pulling out a note card or a book or a notepad or something. You can just remember how it works. So let's say you're about to talk to a pretty girl or someone you're attracted to, and you're feeling nervous and insecure and self-conscious. So the first part of the ACT exercise is awareness. You stop and ask yourself, you know, what am I feeling and what am I thinking? Mm-hmm. It's that simple. Just become aware of your body and yourself. Scan your body real quick. You know, are you tense? Are you feeling pain? Is your heart pounding? Are you going flush? Are you cold? Are you shaky? You know, what sensations are you having and what emotions are you having? You might be figure out that, like, oh, I'm angry for some reason. Or, oh, I feel really sad all of a sudden. Or I'm afraid. I'm really worried. I'm scared. So awareness is the first step in solving any kind of problem. Like, what's really going on? And asking yourself, what am I thinking also? So it's body, emotion, and mind. Mm-hmm. What am I thinking? And if you tune in a little bit and kind of listen to your own head, you'll find that in the background, there's like this little repeating voice or a recurring thought that's usually pretty simple and negative. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to lose, or she's going to hate me, or I'm a big fat loser, or I'm ugly, or I always screw up. There'll be some simple recurring negative thought in the background. You need to tune into that and acknowledge it and go, oh, that's what's making me feel this way. It's not the pretty girl. She's just the outer stimulus, the trigger that's triggering this automatic response that I have again and again in these kind of situations. So having that awareness, like, it has nothing to do with her really. She's just triggering this negative thought, and the negative thought is making me feel this emotion. Usually emotions are preceded by a thought.
Uh-huh.
So it's important to figure out what am I thinking. So that's step one. It's like, what am I feeling, thinking, and sensing? And then the C in ACT stands for core concern. Mm-hmm. So there's basically three core concerns. And number one is our physical safety or our physical well-being. You know, it might not always be that we're in danger physically, but it could be that you got to pee or that you're really tired mm-hmm. or that you're really hungry. You know, people get really emotional when they're hungry and they don't think they're going to get something to eat. So taking care of your physiology is very important.
Uh-huh.
So tuning in and finding out what core concerns do I have that are not being met? Is it my physiology? Is it my need for assurance? You know, knowing that everything's going to be okay, I'm supplied and supported, and that I'm going to get my basic needs met. You know, you might be stressed out about rent, or you might be worried about how things are going to go in the next few seconds. There's going to be some kind of core concern that you're worried about that's not being met. And then third is usually about love and belongingness and social acceptance or social status and power. And so if you just ask yourself, you know, what core concern at a basic level is not being met that's making me think these negative thoughts mm-hmm. that are making me feel these emotions, it's like, you know, we're unwinding it. We're digging down inside of us like into a mine, and there's gold inside of us.
Uh-huh.
And these tools can help us kind of dig down and find that gold and mine it and then, you know, cash it in. So once you're aware of, and you might have multiple concerns like, well, I got to pee real bad and my friends are over there egging me on and I'm worried that she's going to see that, I got something in my teeth or that I have zits on my face or that I think, you know, I'm not in great enough shape or I'm afraid she's going to reject me. You know, that's usually what's happening a lot.
Yeah.
And then the third step is real simple. Take action. What do I need to do to get my core concerns met?
Mm-hmm.
Do I need to just pause? If I'm too tense to even think, I should probably back off and go breathe and get some perspective and come back again later, or maybe get some support or go to the bathroom or eat a sandwich, take a nap, take a walk, stop working, start working. There's always an action you can take. And a lot of times people, you know, including me, we don't do something about it. We don't make a decision and take action. We sit there and we try to get rid of it through our thinking. You know,
yeah.
We try to rationalize things away and it doesn't usually work. We get obsessive about it or we avoid it altogether. And it's like a tea kettle sitting on a hot stove. We don't take it off the stove and mm-hmm. eventually it blows. And unfortunately it blow up in the wrong direction a lot of times at the wrong person.
Yeah.
So awareness, ask yourself what your core concern is and then take action. Get it met. It's that simple.
The full interview goes on to cover how to rewrite false stories from childhood, dealing with subconscious triggers, identifying and dealing with dysfunctional defense strategies, overcoming fear of intimacy, and much more. It's available as part of the Confident Man program from confidentman.net/program.